The Blitz. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston. A Gau Media station. If you're not down with that, we got two words for you.
Are you ready?
Hey, you think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters.
From the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, hour number two. 713-780-3776 is your number. You can also hit us up on The Blitz Facebook page. You know all the ways to get in touch with us. Screw all that. I want to talk to... We have a Hall of Fame quarterback in our midst.
Yeah, I'm here asking him personal questions.
No big deal. Moon.
Yeah, he wants to know how much money I make a year.
Yeah.
That's pretty personal.
Not a year. Well, when you were playing, we could just Google it. I mean, well, we didn't have Google when you were playing, but if you were still playing, we could just Google it. But now I've got to be like, oh, what do you get for these autograph shows? That's what I was curious about. But it's an interesting thing, and I guess it's a good way for retired athletes to keep making money. And there's always... There's always going to be fans of these guys, especially guys who had some success, and you definitely did.
Yeah, there's a lot of collectors out there, and there's people that want autographs for different reasons. And, you know, I give a lot of autographs just on my own when I'm walking through a mall or when people see me out, and I'll sign autographs. And a lot of collectors hate that about me because there's a lot of guys that will not sign anything right. Unless it's for money. But I'll sign for pretty much anybody, but I also sign in these shows too. And like you said, that's a way for us to continue to keep making money. And I mean, I think I earned it, so I'm going to keep doing it as long as there's a market out there that wants my signature.
Hell yeah.
Now, you're a popular guy still in this city, man. It was a great career here.
Best quarterback who's ever played in this
without
town.
Without a doubt, best quarterback in the history of Houston football.
There's a lot of good ones, too.
Well, Kelly was here.
You had George Blanda was here.
High.
Jim Kelly was here. You had Dan Pastorini.
You're reaching now. You're reaching now. Let's stop with Jim Kelly and Warren Moon. Everything else, I don't know.
So Jim's pretty good, and I hope he's doing well because I know he's still
got
on with
man,
the cancer.
It's crazy.
And, you know, my heart goes out to him and also my prayers.
Do you get back to Canada very often? I know you're still real popular up there. My wife is from Saskatchewan. She's a Riders fan, so she hated you, but she talks about you and Doug Flutie in the same, you know, revered tones. Do you still get up there much?
I get up there, you know, a couple of times a year for different either fundraisers. We have a very active alumni group with the Edmonton Eskimos where I played. So if there's something going on that my schedule permits, I'll go up there and support that golf tournament, whatever it might be. And I love going up to Canada, all around the different parts of the country, because like you said, I still have a popularity up there. I go on a lot of different radio shows up there all the time. So those were great people to me when I was a very young guy, gave me a chance to play professional football, and I'll always remember that.
Guy like Johnny Manziel, do you think he'd benefit from going up and playing for Hamilton?
I really do. I think he should have did that even coming out of college, but he was good enough to be a first-round draft pick, even though you know, he didn't live up to that because of some of the other problems that he had. But I think it's a viable opportunity. It's a viable alternative for guys who are trying to get themselves back into the good graces of the league to go up there and show what they can do. And the game is kind of tailor-made for his style. So why not go up there, have some success, and then if the right teams like you and see what you're doing and you're progressing, then you might get a chance to come back here and play again. But in the meantime, you're getting a chance to play football every weekend and go through all the different things that quarterbacks go through, all the different situations and things that you don't do when you're not playing or when you're just sitting on the sidelines. So I think it would be a great opportunity for him.
For you, when you came to Houston, it was kind of the right time, I think, for in your career to leave Canada. But when did you know that, hey, I'm going to get a shot in the NFL? Was it year one? Was it year two? Was it at the end of your tenure? Say, hey, I'm going to go to the NFL and I'm going to get an opportunity somewhere.
To tell you the truth, I really didn't know. I really didn't. As well as I played up there, I still didn't know if ever I was going to get that call, because as I look back into the league, I think Doug Williams was in the league at that time, but then he left and he went to the USFL. I think Vince Evans was another African-American quarterback at that time. He left and went to the USFL. There wasn't any African-American quarterbacks in the league. When I came to Houston, I was the only starter in the league, and then Brian Ransom was our third-string quarterback. He was the only other African-American in the league. So when I was up there, I just didn't know if it was going to ever happen for me. And I had already kind of said to myself, maybe I'm going to stay up here the rest of my career because I enjoyed it. I loved being up there. I loved playing. I loved winning. But I got to a point to where I had so much success, it's like I'm looking for new challenges. And the NFL was always, you know, my main goal when I started playing football as a young kid. So there's no question I wanted to try it if I got the opportunity.
Do you think if you were a white guy, you would have been in the NFL from the beginning?
Probably. At that time, yeah.
Is that frustrating? Yeah. I mean, no. Not now, but I mean, at the time, was it frustrating for you?
It was definitely frustrating, but I also understood what I was dealing with at that time, so there was nothing I could really do about it. I just knew that was the times. That was the mentality of a lot of teams. It wasn't like there wasn't any African-American quarterbacks at any time. You know, James Harris, who I rooted for with the Rams, had been in the league and had some success. Marlon Brisco was the first one. I think Joe Gilliam was another one that I looked at, but those guys were gone. So, it was just you just didn't know, you know, what teams were going to think about you as an African-American quarterback at that time. And I just had to kind of just in my mind say, okay, I'm just going to keep working hard. I'm going to keep trying to get better. And hopefully when that knock on the door comes, I'll be ready to walk through that door.
I'd always kind of thought by now we'd be to a point where we wouldn't think about black quarterbacks versus white quarterbacks, or like did you have a black quarterback or a white quarterback, but they still do, obviously. Not as much.
If you look around the league and see where African Americans are being drafted now, they're up at the top of the draft. You look a couple of years ago, Jameis Winston was the number one overall pick. Michael Vick was the number one overall pick. Cam Newton was the number one overall pick. Donovan McNabb, number three overall pick. A lot of African Americans have been high round draft picks. Have done very well or being highly endorsed and all those different things too. So there's no question things have changed. The mentality of African-Americans at that position has definitely changed in the National Football League. And they just feel like now if you can play, you'll get an opportunity. But there are other guys like a Lamar Jackson who we're talking about in the draft this year. There's some people that are saying that he probably should try and switch positions, even though he's had a successful career in college as a quarterback. So he's going to give it an opportunity, and I hope somebody gives him a legitimate opportunity to play quarterback.
And I actually covered you with the Oilers when I was at the Chronicle when you first came over, and some of the stuff you had to deal with was not just there's a lot of off the field stuff. There'd be rumors. There's people creating controversy that wasn't there. You were more in the spotlight than I think. Some of the things you had to deal with, I don't think people get anymore because there really was just, not just racist stuff, but I mean, they make up stuff about your personal life.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the fact that you dealt with that with as much dignity as you did was really impressive.
Again, you just kind of understood that was the times, and I knew playing that position, it was going to bring on a lot of popularity, but it was also going to bring on a lot of scrutiny. And the fact that I was African-American might bring on a little bit more. So, I did have to be a little bit tougher about it. It did bother me from time to time. Not so much me, because I dealt with some of that when I went to college at the University of Washington as well. So I had dealt with it. But now all of a sudden you have a family and you have young kids who have to deal with it and go to school every day and get teased by kids or be in the stands and listen to people call your dad names and things like that. That's the part that was tough for me to deal with, to try and switch from being a football player after a game to now sitting my son down in the locker room and trying to explain to him what he was listening to in the stands.
Are you still, I think you are still, the only black quarterback in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
How long do you think it's going to take before someone joins you there?
I hope not long. You'd like to see, somebody like Donovan McNabb, who had a really good career, went to a Super Bowl, went to, I think, four NFC championship games, has a really good touchdown interception ratio. He's a guy that I think deserves a nod. You look at Randall Cunningham winning a couple of MVPs when he was a player and how dynamic he was at the time when he was playing. He's probably got a chance to be a Hall of Famer one day. So we'll just have to wait and see, but it was definitely quite an honor for me to be the first. And, I thanked all those guys who came before me, like we talked about earlier, Doug Williams. I thanked James Harris and all the guys who were kind of mentors to me coming up and gave me that motivation that maybe one day I could play in the league as well.
You were a part of a lot of really interesting teams with the Oilers. Not just, I mean, good teams, but also teams that had a lot of off-field drama. And that whole NFL Network thing they did on that.
Our 93 team was a hoot, you know. There was not a dull day that whole season. And for us to be able to, you know, still win 12 games that year. I think we won 11 games in a row at that time, and nobody had ever done that until I think the Patriots did it when they won the 18 straight. But it just shows, you know, the type of talent that we had on that team, and it was such a disappointment that we didn't do better in the playoffs because that was a very, very talented team. But I think by the end of the year, we were just emotionally and mentally drained by everything that we had to deal with throughout that year. I can't make that as an excuse for why we lost. Of course, Kansas City just beat us. You know, they beat us fair and square, but we dealt with a lot that season.
What was your favorite memory as an Oiler? Because you certainly had a lot of good moments.
Yeah, I think the first, the biggest memory or the best was, you know, we went through about 3 years, my first 3 years of some really tough time trying to build our football team. Because when I came here, we were 2-14 team the year before, and we had some lean years up until we finally, I think in 1987, won our first playoff game at home against Seattle. And just to know what we had gone through, everything that I had gone through personally, our team had gone through, and to finally, you know, break into the playoffs, win a game at home in front of our home crowd, that was one of the highlights.
Are you living in Seattle still?
I am. Yeah, I'm working with the Seahawks, and I've been doing their color analyst work for the last 14 years. And I wanted to stay here in Houston, but there wasn't a football team here when I retired. Yeah. You know, the Texans didn't come in to, what, 05 or something like that. So I wanted to stay in football. I got that opportunity to go up to Seattle where I had played and where I went to school. So I decided to go up there and move. But I'm down here in Houston a lot. I have 4 kids that still live here. They're grown. They have families. I'm here this weekend. My 11-year-old granddaughter, Kylie, we're having a birthday party for her tonight. I have a new grandson who I haven't seen yet. It was just born a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to get a chance to see him as well. So a lot of family still here, and so I'm down here a lot visiting.
Yeah, your son, one of your sons worked for us for a while.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, my son Joshua, he's the one who is the father of Noah, and I'm looking forward to seeing him tonight.
You talked about they didn't have a team. They do now.
Yeah, they do.
And The owner's been in the news as of late. Bob McNair, he can't seem to keep his mouth shut about things. If you had heard some of the stuff that it's reported that Bob McNair said, how would you have handled that if you were playing at the time?
I would have actually went and talked to him just to really get his sense of did he really say these things? And if he did say these things, what did he mean by them?
Right.
Because I'm his quarterback, and I'm a spokesperson for the organization, and I want us all to be on the same page about what's going on. But if I'm not on the same page, I at least want to understand your side of it. So that would have been how I would have handled it as a quarterback. I would have went to him to find out exactly what he meant by these things, because I think the owners, you know, it's only 32 of them, they should have a gag order amongst of them just to not even talk about that subject right now, because none of them are on the same page as far as the messages they're trying to put out there to the communities around the country. Some say they don't mind the kneeling. Some say they don't like it. Some say they're going to look at it. Everybody's got a different opinion about it, and I think they really need to get a more solid opinion as a league on how they want to handle this whole thing.
What do you think happened with Colin and the Seahawks?
I think they asked him the question straight out. Are you still thinking about doing the kneeling? And what else are you doing as a social activist? And I think when he gave them the answers, they didn't like probably the amount of time he still wants to spend on that. And I think when you're a quarterback in the NFL, you've got to be all in on football. And that doesn't mean you can't do anything else in your life, but that definitely can't be one of your main motivations. And I think that's the biggest concern with all the teams around the league about Colin. How much does he love the game of football, and how much does he really want to play it? And I think the fact that he's suing the NFL, that doesn't help either.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's was not part of the
help
question.
You get, that's not going to help you get a job when you're trying to sue your employer. But I understand he's trying to sue his employer to try and get an opportunity to play, but it just doesn't it doesn't paint a good picture for him as far as getting another opportunity to come back in the league.
All right, that's Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon. There's a huge event this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at the BioCity Event Center. Autograph signing featuring Warren Moon, tons of former and current NFL and Major League Baseball stars. Troy Aikman's going to be there, LaDainian Tomlinson. Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, and many more. But the biggest name is Warren Moon. He will be there.
That's right.
It'll be a lot of fun. I hope people come out and to say hello and take a picture, or if you want to get an autograph, do that as well. And it's always great to be back in Houston and see the fans that I've had here for so long.
Well, great to have you on. Thanks for spending some time with us. And my favorite moment of yours was the 527-yard game against the Chiefs.
That was pretty special, too. I mean, I'm glad we won that game. You know, what if you're Tom Brady, you throw for five, whatever, in the Super Bowl and you lose? So you definitely want to win when you have those type of performances.
Yeah, it wound up being a close game. It was 28-21, I think. But I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback that was on his game as much as you were that day. I mean,
actually, it was 27-10.
27-10?
Yeah. Get with the times, Fred. Yeah. You know,
we got after him pretty good that day. That's why I came out of the game early, believe it or not, and people said I could have broke the record, but I just wanted to come out because I didn't want to keep throwing the ball and try and break a record, just throwing it when you know you're comfortable in the lead and you might play that team again somewhere down the line in the playoffs.
How long ago did you ditch the mustache?
Probably 3 or 4 years after I retired. I just wanted a different look.
And man, when I picture Warren Moon in my head, like I expect you to walk in here with that standalone
I know,
mustache.
And now the mustache is coming back again, so who knows? I might have to grow it back
again.
You.
It might be time for you.
I was the black Tom Selleck back in those days.
You were. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we appreciate the time, Warren, and hopefully you guys go out and see him tomorrow and get some autographs and some pictures and say hello. Be at the Bayou City Event Center.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, man. Thank you. All right, I got to tell you about Republic Harley Davidson, guys. There's a lot of dealerships that are closer to my house than Republic. I don't care, though. If I'm going to get my bike worked on, I'm getting it worked on by the best in the business, and that's the guys at Republic Harley Davidson. 7 master technicians on staff, way more than any other dealer in Houston. You know the job is going to get done right. If you haven't been out to Republic Harley Davidson, you wouldn't understand the glory of their showroom. They've got the best selection, the best inventory, about 100 brand new bikes on their showroom floor, every model, every color. And outside, they've got a ton of pre-owns as well. Right now, when you buy a Softail at Republic, get a helmet, a jacket, and boots thrown in for free. If you need new tires, great time to get them. Get a full set installed while you wait for just $329 after a $70 rebate. Mark your calendar for Bike Night as well. It's coming up April 19th from 6 to 9. The Mark May Band is going to be performing live. They're going to have great food, door prizes, and they're giving away a Harley Davidson. You can only register to win at Bike Nights. The more you come for it, the more you get, more chances you get to register. In October, one lucky winner is walking away with a new Harley. Whatever your need, service, newer pre-owned bikes, merchandise, riding classes, Republic Harley Davidson is the best in Houston. 12707 Southwest Freeway in Stafford, just outside the Beltway, or online at republichd.com. That's Republic Harley Davidson.
Listen to your favorite ESPN 97.5 show on the go with the ESPN 97.5 app for iOS or Android. Presented by Saltgrass Steakhouse. Now back to the Blitz with Fred and AJ.
And we're back on the Blitz. That was fun.
Yeah.
Having Warren in here. And I guess I should have told him he's on my list of people I want to get high with.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Not.
Yeah, he is.
Well, he lives in Washington. It's
I know.
Legal.
It's probably it's perfectly legal. I'll just go up there and
go visit him.
Yeah, we were just having a nice chat while he was waiting for he's going on Robin's show now, and while he's waiting for them to come off air, we had a nice little chat about some stuff. Good dude. So
very nice guy.
He is very nice.
So I guess somebody must have told them that I do MMA, and he was asking me a bunch of questions about it. He was like, "What do you think about what's going on in your sport?" I was like, man, maybe he's got me mixed up with somebody. Maybe he thinks I'm like, I'm Sean Salisbury. But no,
he was talking
interested in MMA.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he's
kind of nice.
He seemed to be a fan. He knew a lot about it, certainly. Yep. But that's a guy I wish was working for the team in town as opposed to Seattle. But good for him. That's there's worse places to be.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that.
Way worse places to be, trust me.
But we don't do a lot of those kind of interviews, so that was kind of cool. And most people seemed to enjoy it. Lauren liked it. Lauren the Aggie and Swan liked it. Brett, Dustin, everybody liked it. So there you go. But, yeah. 713-780-ESPN. We'll have RJ Bell next. So,
oh yeah,
it's gonna be
It's flying by.
It is. It
Look
is.
At us.
Tell you. So, and unfortunately, this is kind of a short segment, so it's I hate to dive into something, but I do have one thing I wanted to talk a little Game of Thrones for just a minute, if I could, because there's nothing wrong with the Game of Thrones update. John, did you mention any of this on your Comicast?
What are you going to mention?
That George R. R. Martin is still pissed about one thing that they changed in the show?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so you should see this kind of stuff you should have on your podcast, just so you know. Not that I'm telling you how to do your job or anything, but they did an interview recently, and he keeps going on and on about Lady Stoneheart. He hates that they took Lady Stoneheart out of the show. Now, in the books, and this is not a spoiler because it's not in the show, Lady Stoneheart is a zombie Catelyn Stark, basically.
Okay.
She comes back from the dead and starts whacking people. So, she's a zombie.
Okay. So, she's like the mountain comes back and...
Right. Right. Although, okay. This is a little different because it's like when Beric was raising what's-his-face every time he'd die. It was kind of like that. But she had her throat slit. And she could barely talk. You couldn't recognize her voice. But she's basically zombie Catelyn Stark.
Okay. So what's he going to do? Is he going to write about her more in the books?
Well, he says in the sixth book, she's a big part of it.
Okay.
The sixth book that we're never going to see because he's going to die before it gets written.
Where?
And at this point, we're way past whatever in the show. We're way past whatever happens in the book anyway. So who cares? But he says at some points when David and Dan and I had discussions about what way we should go in, I would always favor sticking with the books while they would favor making changes. Well, that makes sense.
Right. I want my idea to be the idea.
I want the way overwritten parts of my book about characters that nobody cares about to dominate. But said, I think the biggest one would be when they made the decision not to bring Catelyn Stark back as Lady Stoneheart. That was
probably Catelyn Stark.
And they called her Cat, but I thought it was Catelyn.
No, you're saying it all wrong.
No, I'm not. Catelyn? That's not how
it's Catelyn Stark.
It's Catelyn.
I mean, I've watched the show, Fred. I don't know how you read it in the book.
I've watched the show, too. I don't remember because she died in
season... Yeah, I think they do call her Catelyn. Littlefinger called her Catelyn, right?
I thought he called her Cat.
Oh, I don't...
I don't think he called her Catelyn. He called her Cat. Whichever. Lady Stark, okay? Does that make you happy?
That's better.
Dickweed. Lady Stark...
I don't mean to correct you.
Oh, yeah, you do.
No.
So, yeah. All right. Fine. But he said that was probably the first major...
Are you going to be mad at me all day now?
It doesn't matter. I don't like you to begin with.
You're on the list now, AJ.
Yeah. You brought that on yourself. You wanted to be hated by all your coworkers. Congratulations.
This is why I am, though.
Oh, yeah. No question. He said that was probably the first major diversion of the show from the books. And, I argued against that. And David and Dan made that decision. He just keeps going on and on. She better damn well kill the Night King in the book if she's that damn important that he keeps bringing this up like all the time. Because in the book, characters can be resurrected. After Catelyn is resurrected as Lady Stoneheart, she becomes a vengeful, heartless killer.
You know what I would say to that, George R. R. Martin? If the book is so important, you get the damn thing written so people can know what it was supposed to be like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It says, in the sixth book, I still continue to write her. She is an important character in the set of books.
You still continue to think about writing her.
Yeah.
While you save wolves and eat Chinese buffets.
And talk about the Jets.
Yeah.
And write on your blog.
I don't think you've written a word, sir. Yeah,
it says, keeping her character is the change I most wish I could make in the show. Yeah, dude, just finish the damn book. All right, we're going to break. It's The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz, and we go from a Hall of Fame quarterback to a Hall of Fame gambling guru. He is the genius of gambling in the entire universe, and our good friend R.J. Bell. Follow him on Twitter at R.J. in Vegas. What's going on, R.J.?
Usually I think, I probably deserve a little better intro, but in Houston, I'm just content.
You get the good stuff here.
I get the good stuff.
How do they introduce you in like Indianapolis or one of those dumps?
I don't do those kind of shows, guys.
Oh, okay. You're only in the major markets.
This is probably the smallest market I do.
Oh, really?
It's just
okay.
Out of love of Texas. Texas forever, baby.
That's right.
And you two. Speaking of you two, lean back. I got a little story for you.
All right. Let's hear it.
So there's a NAB conference or convention, right? National Association of Broadcasters, which is the biggest radio and TV event of the year here. I think anywhere, but it's here in Vegas. By the way, a little aside, I went down Wednesday and walked 6.6 miles. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But I met a guy and I was talking to him at one of the booths and we were talking about, you know, this or that. And he goes, you know, I think I know who you are. And make a long story short, he's a listener of you guys. And it was very fascinating, some of his takes. So I'm going to share some of them.
Okay.
One was, I can't believe these guys aren't in jail, was like one of his general takes. Like, you push the line so much, it's almost hard to fathom.
What have we ever done that would get us sent to jail?
You know, I mean, like that, I'm not saying I don't listen every moment of the day, but, you know, how I'm thinking his implication was, in fact, I know it was like Howard Stern-esque, like, oh, this guy's got to have the FCC, you know, going to get involved here. Maybe not jail, but civil, you know, civil penalties and such.
Hmm. Well.
And he said, now this was especially good. He listens to you whenever he can, but if his wife's in the car, he has to turn it because she's afraid that she's going to get offended.
Oh, no. Poor guy.
Sorry, wife.
He needs to get out of that marriage.
But yeah. I think it's a good sign, though, of like you got your brand is just, you know how they say on brand, off brand? Your brand is outlaw on the edge.
It's all because of Fred.
You think?
Oh, yeah. He's a rebel without a cause.
I tell you this. I've talked to a lot of radio guys. There was a or a listeners. He was a avid fan. So kudos.
That's very cool.
Yeah, we have some really, really loyal listeners that can remember stuff about the show that even we don't, which I like.
Well, you know, I had his name, but it's in my phone. I wanted to give him a shout-out. So if you don't mind, after our segment, I'll email John, and if you guys can give him a quickie,
sure.
That might be
just
nice.
Tweet us.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Either way. All right, so how excited are you about NBA playoffs now that you can we got those coming up. Obviously, the Rockets and Warriors are pretty heavy favorites in the title odds. Is there anybody you look at and you say, I might throw a few bucks on these guys?
You know, it really is important to start, and we've talked about this, so I'll go over it quickly because, again, you've got those dedicated listeners, not those three-minute guys you hear about that, oh they only listen to each show for 3 minutes.
We are TSL monsters.
In any other sport, and I think pretty much any other sport, my instinct is to go underdog, right? And I'm not talking so much about games, though that's certainly true too. But I'm saying, hey, can I find a juicy, you know, 20-1, 30-1 type? And it's very important to remember in basketball, the better team wins a higher percentage of the time, advance in the series more than any other sport. Because the one and done's, obviously, it's easier to get upset one game than 4 out of 7. But then amongst baseball and hockey, the amount of luck in baseball and hockey, because one scoring play is, let's say, 10, you know, could be 10, 20, 30% of the total run scored, let's say a 3-run homer versus a strikeout or one goal, right? So out of 6 or 5 or 6 goals, that's huge. But in basketball, 1 3-point bucket, let's say that's lucky, that bounces off the rim 6 times, and in is 3 out of 220 points or whatever. So you got 7 games. You've got the better or lot less luck. And you got the love of the superstar. And we've talked about this so many times. If you go back the modern era, Bird, Magic, 1980 onward, over 90% of the years, I would say, and some of this is fairly subjective, there's been a top 3 player in the NBA. On the team that won. And obviously, every time Michael won, every time Shaq won, every time Duncan won. Now, again, we can debate Duncan the one late year. He wasn't there, but was Kawhi. Maybe Kawhi was third. Maybe Kawhi was fourth. I don't know. We can debate that. But for the most part, you think about it, from Hakeem to Isaiah, I mean, almost every champion had a true top three player. So who's the top three players in the NBA? I think everyone's going to agree with LeBron. Everyone's going to agree with Durant. And I think you've got to put Harden there right now. So to me, if we you go by that history, it's either the Cavs, the Warriors, or the Rockets. Oh, my, what a coincidence. The number one favorite, the Warriors plus 140, Rockets plus 185 or so, so a little bit better payout, and the Cavs at 8.5-1. So I think history tells us that these three teams are the ones with the chance, and the odds are great.
Having said that, I mean, the Warriors have been odds on most of the year. Is plus 140 not a pretty darn good price for that team?
Well, it's been a huge downgrade. I mean, there was points, Fred, in the year that they were as high as minus 220. Golden State, minus 220 to win the title, meaning you got them and the bookie got 29 other teams, and you still had to lay over $2. That was historic. I mean, literally in Jordan's best year, it was Jordan even money against the field. So the idea that they were such a big favorite, which was pretty comparable to what they were last year, Golden State, was historic. The fact they've gone from minus 220 to plus 140 is a huge downgrade. And the Rockets obviously, you know, got off to a good start. You know, after the new year, I think they were 5-1, 6-1 for quite a while. And then, boom, they had to jump recently or in the last, let's say, 6 weeks. I would say this. You hear minus 220 plus 140 and they feel kind of similar. Like they're right around, you know, it's not like minus 700 or plus 700. But think about it. You bet $100 at minus 220, you're making like, $45 on the 100, right? You bet 100 on Warriors now plus 140, you're making 140. So you're making over three times the money now betting 100 on the Warriors than you would have at their high point. So, yes, Golden State's still the favorite, but you're right, Fred, significant downgrade.
You've got kind of a fascinating bet on the Raptors here to turn what's basically a plus 180 into a plus 370. Explain that one for the people.
I like this. And I love it. See, a value hunter like you, Fred, is going to hunt that out in the notes.
Yep.
One thing I've been thinking a lot about recently, and this is more advanced stuff, but again, we got an advanced listenership here, is how do you make multiple bets that replicate a single bet, but because of the multiple bets potentially, and not in every case, but they're going to give a better payout. So right now, Toronto, if you want to bet them to win the East, it's Toronto plus 180 to make the finals, Cleveland plus 110 or so. So you're saying, all right, now this is another whole interesting conversation, which is if you watch the First Take type shows and the other debate shows, the debate is, are the Cavs a mortal lock or just a lock to make the final, right? And if you look at the odds, the Vegas markets are saying no, less than 50% chance. A drunk baby flipping a coin has a better chance of getting heads than LeBron making the finals based upon the odds. And you could say the odds are wrong. And remember, anytime you think the odds are wrong here in Vegas, we will bet you that in the long run, we're going to be right more than wrong. Maybe wrong in this case, but Raptors, number one seed, plus 180. Okay, I like the Raptors. Plus 180, I'm on the borderline of wanting to play them. I think the Cavs are way overrated. That defense is just such a big problem. And the Sixers are surging, but I'm not that worried. Okay. Now, you bet Toronto, though, to win the title, not the East, at 13-1. Now, assuming either Golden State or Houston meets them in the finals in this hypothetical, right? Now, obviously, if Toronto gets beat before the finals, you would have lost the Eastern bet anyway. So the only time that really matters is if they make the finals and don't win. So what do? We hedge the opponent of Toronto. So we're assuming it's either Golden State or Houston. Keep in mind, actually, a lot of people don't realize this. Toronto would have home court over Golden State. So we estimate, no matter who it is, the line would be in the minus 350 range for the series. So Houston or Golden State would be a huge favorite or a big favorite over Toronto. But if you bet that full amount at minus 350, so let's say 100 wins you 1,300, and then you bet that whole 1,300 on Toronto, the way, you know, so you're going to make the same amount no matter what, you still are getting effectively plus 370 on Toronto. So for every 100 you bet on Toronto, you're going to get 370. If they just win the East, we'll be neutral in the championship because of the hedge. But if you just do it plain and bet Toronto to win the East, it's only plus 180. So we're getting over double payout that way. So if you do like Toronto, I would rather take the 13-1 and hedge out in the finals.
Well, two thoughts on that. I don't like Toronto, and B, the reason we keep getting arrested is because you talk about drunk babies on the show. I think this is on you.
Come on, man. You're going to get us in trouble.
Let's be honest.
Drunk babies getting head.
I mean, what? You guys might have grown up in a softer environment than me. But where I grew up, there was a lot of pacifiers in the whiskey bottle to settle the kids down. Not my kids. I'm saying when I was a kid. Luckily, I avoided that, I think. That's what they tell me. How would I know, really?
Yeah, it's cold up there. You guys have to do
that's
that.
Right.
Yeah. All right. RJ Bell is our guest, founder of pregame.com. And that's really good stuff. But that kind of goes to something that we try to talk about on this show a lot, is how you can get more value out of something than what's offered. And that, I think that's just a perfect example of it. So by turning something into a better price. That's what I do with a lot of these hockey bets that I make during the playoffs here, is I have some future bets, and then I'll start hedging as I get closer to make sure that I at least get, you know, 2 or 3 to 1 back on my money. So,
but see, that's a whole other conversation, right? I'm actually a strong proponent of not hedging.
Right. Right.
But
in this case,
you're planning
to do it as part
exactly.
of your
exactly. But when right. you plan a hedge, you've got to account for the hedging is expensive. There's an expense to hedging, right? It's almost like if you change an airline flight, right? If you know you're going to, if you're like, let's buy it now for the middle of July, we know we're going to have to change it. And assuming this airline has a change fee, well, that's fine. If you think the change fee plus the current price is going to be better than the price in the future on the exact date, do it. But you better account for that change fee, right, as you're considering it. I'm accounting for the expense of the hedge, and I still think there's value. By the way, two quick things. One, speaking of hedging, we talked about it a couple times. Derek Stevens, he's a casino owner here in Vegas, had the $1 million ticket on Michigan in the NCAA tournament. This week, he was in the pregame.com offices. We did a 90-minute deep dive. He had two PR people there. They were scared. But we got a lot of good stuff out of him. And I tell you, it's not only the inside story of his decision on hedging that $1 million ticket, and why he did it surprised me. We spent like 10 minutes on that. But also, and guys, you would enjoy this, I'm sure, talking about like he sit up with the eye in the sky and what he likes to look at and the kind of machines he wants and how often he changes the machines on the floor. Just kind of like the thought process of owning a casino. I've never really heard that discussed. And if you just search for RJ Bell on any podcast player, you're going to get our feed, and that's one of the podcasts this week.
That actually sounds fascinating. So he's like De Niro in Casino?
No, you know what's funny? He's got, and again, he's been very nice to me over the years, and this was the longest we had talked. He's a real visionary because he's building downtown. So for people who don't come to Vegas often, there's the Strip, right? Bellagio, Mirage, Venetian. That's where, like, AJ and Fred hang. And then there's a place, if you're, like, from Odessa, let's say, you're going to go downtown, right? Downtown's the old place where Binion's is, for example, the Golden Nugget. And the way I think of it is, if Wheeling, West Virginia had a casino, it would look like downtown Vegas. a lot of fanny packs, big bellies, mullets. And but it's got that old school feel, like fried Twinkies and all kind of like all kind of crazy stuff down there. He owns like four separate properties downtown. So he's like the visionary of downtown. And he does have that old school, right? He bet $25,000 on a 40-to-1 shot. He likes to gamble. But what I thought was fascinating, we uncovered, this guy is hyper intellectual. He just doesn't show it. So he'll start talking, he'll explain, well, this and this and this theory, and you can tell it's not coming from instincts, it's coming from, you know, academics. Because he did graduate from the University of Michigan, a very good school. I mean, even as a Ohio State fan, they don't win very much at sports, but they at least have good academics. But he really puts off like he's, oh, yeah, I'm just like you, drinking beer, and I like to gamble. But there's a lot of intelligence behind it. And that kind of yin and yang of being the gambling old school guy on the surface, but his decisions being driven by an academic intellectual approach, that contrast is something I really pushed up against in the interview.
All right, that's RJ Bell, and I love how you got to dig in at Michigan there. You couldn't
hey,
help yourself.
It's natural. It's natural.
All right, follow him on Twitter at RJ in Vegas. Check out pregame.com if you have it. Great website. Joins us every Friday at 5:30. RJ, great stuff as always, my friend. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right.
So we still have a few minutes before the top of the hour. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, look at us. We could have kept them on.
Yeah, that's my bad, John.
No, you're good.
I just figured 5:52, combining the breaks.
No, I did that earlier in the hour, so I just spread them out.
So this is on me.
No. Well, I should have told you.
I'm very sad.
It's kind of on you.
Kind of.
I'm not all on you.
What does Caitlin Stark say about it?
Come on.
One of the... Blitzer says his wife was telling him how she listens to us even when he's not there. We have a lot of female
That's
listeners.
Because she wants to have sex with Fred.
No, she doesn't. No one does.
That's
my right hand doesn't even want to have sex with Fred.
I've heard rumors out there of women who want
you. You're making them up.
Didn't you have a lot of women come out during the Astros opening day thing?
Tons.
A few. I mean, I wouldn't say tons.
You know, they were, and they wanted to take pictures with Fred. They had one of them admitted to having a crush on Fred.
Oh, really?
No, you're exaggerating. They were just saying hello.
Okay.
Trust me.
Guess how many women said hello to me, Jong?
Someone from our promo team.
Yeah, I don't even know if they did.
It's because I'm friendly.
Maybe so.
I mean, I actually take time to hang out with people.
Maybe because you're a charmer.
I'm not a charmer. I'm an old, disgusting man who's going to die soon. They just want to get their picture taken with me so before I'm gone and they can't do it anymore. And it won't be any fun to take a picture of me in the casket.
That's true.
So, which I don't even know if I'm going to be in a casket. I haven't decided whether I'm getting cremated or what yet. I probably need to decide that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, death is creeping.
You never know.
Death is creeping around the corner waiting for me.
Would you get cremated and someone take your ashes to Churchill? Churchill Downs?
You know what? It wouldn't be Churchill.
Oh, really?
I would have it at... It would either be...
Greyhound.
No. It'd either be at Santa Anita.
Isn't that going to get knocked down anyway?
No. Not Santa Anita.
Okay.
No, that was Hollywood Park you were thinking
That's
about.
The one, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it's gone, so I don't want my ashes on a football field. So it would either be Santa Anita, it'd be Sam Houston Race Park, or more likely, I would just like to have my ashes spread over Galveston Beach somewhere.
Okay.
I mean,
it's not like there's already enough stuff on Galveston Beach. Yeah. Enough gross stuff
out
there.
Yeah, basically, my ashes will be mating with seaweed.
What's a little bit of dead Fred on your feet when there's, you know...
Yeah.
Heroin needles and glass shards stuck in your foot at the end of the night.
It's mostly seaweed.
Seaweed.
It's that gross green seaweed that gets up down there. But that's where my ashes should probably go, into something gross.
So. Seems best.
Just a thought.
I'm not going to... Listen, when you die, it's not my problem. It's somebody else's.
Well, I'm not...
You need to tell your wife where you want.
Nobody's saying it is your problem. I just said I haven't decided what I want done with my ashes or body or whatever. But yes, I need to make that decision.
Because I don't think you saying it on the radio makes it legally binding.
No, but at least somebody would have heard it and maybe tell her, hey, I heard him say this on the radio. Why don't you go back and listen to the podcast? And yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. She doesn't listen to me.
No.
So she's going to do whatever she wants. That's if, you know. Oh, by the way, Brian Wiseman is the guy that RJ was talking about.
Brian Wiseman. Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Or maybe
Weisman.
I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce names anymore, but it's Weismann.
You mean Brian of Tarth Weisman?
Brian. I'm going to go with Brian. Brian W.
Fred, it's Golfgate time. It's time for you to stop talking because it's Golfgate time. That means insane savings at Golfgate Dodge. Don't miss your chance to save all month long during the spring sales event they've got going on now at Golfgate Dodge, Chrysler, Jeep, Ram. Golfgate is your spring savings headquarter Monday through Friday and every Sunday. That's right. They're open on Sundays. Right now, you can get a 2018 Ram Lone Star Crew Cab 4x2 for only $29,917. Or how about a new 2018 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited Sport 4x4? You can lease it for just $264 a month for 36 months. Hurry into Golfgate Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram during the spring savings event. It's going on now. 610 South Loop East and Gulf Freeway. And you can see it always online at golfgatedodge.com. Ram Lone Star Crew Cab plus tax title and license with approved credit. Jeep Wrangler Unlimited Sport 36-month lease with $1,724 down with approved credit. See dealer for details. Offer expires 4/30/2018. That's Golfgate Dodge and online at golfgatedodge.com.
ESPN 97.5.